Episode number 7 of the Silk Fitness Therapy and Silk 106.9 are getting fit for summer and the big summer holidays, which have now officially started, incidentally, across Cheshire. All good. And the weather is just right on cue as well. And before we start, Mike, let's just talk about this weather, because I've heard a lot of people go, I can't train in this. I'm one of those. You know, I skipped the gym yesterday because of the thunderstorm on Tuesday night. And then yesterday it was too warm anyway. So I went at 6 o'clock this morning and it was still, I still struggled to get by.
It was top 24 tips. 24 degrees, wasn't it?
24 degrees this morning at 6 o'clock in the gym that I go to, right? So, top tips very quickly on how to deal with this, if indeed to train at all in this kind of heat.
Drink some water.
That's it.
Drink lots of water.
Yeah. You do that anyway when you train.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, drink. Make sure you drink probably more water.
So, you don't have to go steady, you don't have to go...
I don't know, it depends how you feel, I guess, but I'd probably just reduce your volume of your sessions a little bit.
Right.
Take into account, it depends what time you train as well, I guess, but yeah, drink more water, maybe reduce the volume a little bit of your sessions. Take a change of clothes.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple of different t-shirts.
Go with how you feel, surely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like you didn't go today because you were feeling not up for it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, and I did. I've just had a Magnum.
And you just had a Magnum.
I've got some white chocolate Magnums in the freezer at the gym.
Yeah, so yeah.
I've got some ice pops for all the members as well. Cheers, Charlotte.
It's perfectly acceptable to have cold, sugary, ice creamy treats in this weather. Yeah.
Recommended.
Yeah. Right, you've brought a guest with you, haven't you, Mike? So I'll let you take the lead, sir.
We have. So this podcast is all about mobility and flexibility. So we've brought along Jack, who is a sports therapist, but I'll let him introduce himself and tell us, so what's your background,
yeah,
mate?
Yeah, cool. So... So my name's Jack. I've just recently qualified as a sports therapist. So studies at University of Central Lancashire in Preston. Prior to that, I was a personal trainer for about 3 years. And I actually worked with Mike at Fitness for All. And incidentally, I also trained Kate as well,
yep,
alongside Mike. So we all know each other. We're all friendly with each other. But yeah, so as a sports therapist, basically my main role is to help with the recovery and prevention of musculoskeletal injuries. So just to break that down, it's basically like muscles, tendons, ligaments, bone.
Are we talking DOMS here or not? No?
DOMS, we can go into that a bit later on.
Okay. Because when people have trained, they go, oh, I can't lift anything the next day, or I can't put my own shirt on or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But that's not an injury though, is it?
No.
No.
Right. So DOMS is basically delayed onset of muscle soreness. So generally that occurs about a day to 2 days afterwards, sometimes a bit longer if you're really unfit or you're really unfamiliar with an exercise, I should say. But no, it's not an injury at all. It's more to do with your body signalling to say, I'm recovering, don't go too hard on me here, give me a bit of recovery time. And like Mike said, on days like today where it's really hot, drink your water, because if you're dehydrated, that can increase the intensity of DOMS, I think is the right way to put it.
I didn't know that. All right.
So, and obviously making sure that you get plenty of protein in your diet to help with the rebuilding of the muscle and soft tissue structures, really. So it's not just muscle, it can be tendon, ligaments as well. Because whilst you're working out, you're putting stress on them. And that's really what you need, because if you're not getting enough protein, that process then becomes a little bit longer and it's not as efficient.
So let's backtrack a little bit, Jack, if you don't mind. So what's the difference between could you tell a difference if you rip a muscle, tear a muscle, hurt a muscle, or a tendon?
So they grade them slightly differently. So you can get tears in the muscle belly. If I remember rightly, it's to do with the grading system. They all work differently. So if you went to the hospital and got a scan, so you get an MRI scan, you would either have a tear in the muscle belly, tear in the, it's called the muscular tendinous junction. So that's the bit where the muscle connects to the tendon. You can get a tear in that, or you can get, they're slightly different in tendons and ligaments. So you'd get a grade 1, 2, or 3 in those. A grade 3 is basically where you just completely rupture it. Grade 2, well, I say a grade 1 is really small tear, and then grade 2 is anything in between. So I can't remember the percentages off the top of my head. think it's something like 2% up to 97% is a grade 2. So
the most common that, one, then.
That's why they say it's a bad grade 2 or a partial grade 2 or a small grade 2. So slightly different. But yeah, if you tore a muscle, you probably get a hell of a lot of bleeding going on. So a lot of swelling, a lot of redness. You'll probably get a bruise as well off it. Whereas tendons, they're not as highly vascularized, so you might not get as much bruising. You still get a bit of swelling. It just depends on the level. So that's kind of the main difference. And pain-wise, depends on the severity again. If you rupture a tendon, actually, it's not as painful as when you partially tear it.
Remember me and Mike mentioned this, didn't we, about the difference between DOMS and the ripping or pulling injury. Injury, you'd feel that straight away, where DOMS would be delayed and maybe a day later or something.
Yeah, typically, if you injure yourself, you know there and then what's done it, where it's gone, typically, depending on what the injury is. Some things you will probably feel a few days later, wouldn't you?
Yeah. So, obviously, DOMS is, it's not a... you wouldn't really class it as a tear, because DOMS is generally produced, it's called like micro trauma, where you get really tiny little tears, and it's generally in the fascia. So fascia is basically what surrounds the muscle fibers. So, and fascia is what you tear when you're working out. It's also what you generally tear when you do an injury, but more severe. So DOMS isn't an injury, it's just those little tears occurring.
A true story, this, actually. I remember the first time I lifted weights, I couldn't dress myself. I've never told you this before.
Yeah.
I couldn't dress myself, but I had to go to the chemist to buy some freezing spray just so I could dress myself and I could eat. So I spray my shoulders
I'll give you a bit of advice on that, because you know the gel packs that you get?
Yes.
Where you like, you might crush them a bit and then they go cold?
Yeah.
Don't use them.
Oh, right, okay.
Use crushed ice in a bag, because... the cold packs actually don't stay cold enough for long enough to actually get into the muscle properly. And that's when you get the effect of the ice.
Is it about 20 minutes?
It depends. So if it's quite, say if it's on your ankle, I'd say 10 to 15.
Yeah.
Because there's not as much soft tissue around it.
Yeah.
So it'll, the what's the word I'm looking for? Cold? The ice will kind of, the cold will penetrate quicker. And it gets to the source of wherever the pain is. Whereas if it's, say, it's on your quad, so big muscle group, you want it to really get deep into the muscle, so 20 minutes.
Yeah. So would you say, like, heat is more of a relaxant, cold is more of a stimulates recovery?
Yeah, so the difference is cold does what's called vasoconstriction, so where your blood vessels basically contract, and then heat relaxes, so vasodilation it's called. Vasodilation allows for more nutrients, more blood flow around the area. Cold does the opposite, essentially. So if you injure yourself, whack ice on it, because that slows down the, it's called the metabolic rate. I won't get too fancy with it, but the metabolic rate of the cell, and that prevents further injury. Whereas if you went and whacked a load of heat on it, that then increases the amount of injury that happens. So... use ice to recover from injury, or if it's really sore the next day, ice is really effective, or use heat as a relaxant.
Yeah. So if like DOMS and stuff, you maybe use like a heat rub?
Yeah, so...
like a tiger balm kind of
thing? Yeah, they...
not a plug for it, but...
So with an injury like the next day, could you alternate between ice and heat to get the relaxation through the muscle and then... the cold to...
not the next day.
Right.
So if it was a direct injury that you had the day after, still ice, only ice.
Okay.
So you do 20 minutes, well, depending on the area, 20 minutes on or 10 to 15 on a more superficial area, and then you do an hour off, I generally say, rule of thumb. So an hour off, then back on the ice again. So you're getting that effect of the vasoconstriction again.
Mm-hmm.
After, depending on the severity of the injury, it's up to 48 to 72 hours afterwards, then you start to reintroduce heat.
Oh, that's okay.
So we call it PRICE principle or RICE principle.
Rice.
I don't know if you've heard of that.
Yeah.
So it's an abbreviation, so an acronym, not an abbreviation. So it's protect, first of all. So if you've injured something, don't go moving it, don't go stressing it. You then got rest, ice, compression, elevation. If you follow those principles for the next day afterwards, the next 2 days afterwards, then you're reducing the amount of damage that's caused. So it's really important to do it. Don't go heating it up.
There we go.
Mike, I'm going to let you take the lead anyway, because you've got some questions, haven't you? And you've got some.
No,
we might have
changed the podcast about injuries.
All right, it's completely changed.
Yeah, so with the podcast being about mobility, flexibility, what's such a bit on training longevity as well? I suppose some of the terms that you might have get thrown around a lot is mobility and flexibility. But what's the difference? What is mobility?
Okay, so the way I've kind of got some notes on there, it's kind of a complex issue, really, without it being too complicated. But flexibility, for me, flexibility is more to do with the muscles and the tendons. So you could call that contractile tissue, so stuff that contracts and relaxes. Mobility, I say, falls under joints. So the mobility of a joint and how it moves. So it is linked to flexibility, because obviously you've got tendons attached onto bone, and they have an effect on how a joint moves and how your limbs move. Mm-hmm. So they both link together, but I would say flexibility, let's talk about muscles really, and then mobility, talk about joints.
Yeah.
And keep it that.
So working simple. Through. So when you hear cut. People talking about like mobility warm-ups,
yeah,
and stuff like that, and how important do you think it is to warm up before a session?
So, yeah, you could break down. So in your warm-ups, you're essentially trying to promote a bit of blood flow around the body, which is really important, because if a muscle's cold, then it's not going to work as efficiently. So what we're trying to do is build up to something a bit more difficult, essentially. So especially when you're going to do high-intensity movements, stuff with a lot of weight, really emphasize warming up, making sure that all the muscles have been worked through the full range of motion and that all the joints have been worked through the full range of motion. I've broken it down. So I like to use what's called the ramp principle in my warm-ups. So that would be raise. So you do a pulse raiser.
Yep.
So that is essentially just warming up the body. So you can do that really gently to start off with and then increase it a little bit. So you generally do that on, say, your cardio equipment. So like your bikes, treadmills, cross trainers, whatever you like, whatever your preference is. You raise the body's temperature up. You then do an activation. So this is where you start to build in your mobility, really. So your activation, you would do maybe a dynamic sort of stretch.
Yeah.
So dynamic stretching, for anyone who doesn't know, is where you move a joint through its full range of motion, but you do it quite controlled, slow. You're not putting too much stress on the joint.
Say, for example, like a big shoulder circle or...
Yeah.
So, along them sort of lines.
Yeah, so you're... Obviously, you could do a shoulder circle slowly, controlled. That's dynamic. You could do it really quickly. If you're doing it quickly, you want to make sure that you are completely warmed up before you start doing that. Because it's not that it's unsafe. It's just you're trying to reduce the likelihood of you getting an injury or the muscles not being properly warmed up to do that movement. You then might go into, so you've done your activation work, you then might do a bit of mobility work alongside that, so specific to what you're going to be doing. That's really important.
That falls right in line with my next question.
So
he's not finished yet.
Well, go on, shut the question.
No. I was just going to say, doing warm-ups that are specific for your session, so for us at the gym, when we've got, you know, max effort upper body days, max effort lower body days, dynamic effort, we do warm-ups that are specific for the session you're about to go into. So
yeah, so that's in line with your specificity. So you can even break that down to like SMART goals that you even set before you even go into your workout. So your SMART goals being specific to what you want to do, measurable, achievable, I think, and something in time.
Realistic,
that's the one. Got that in the end. So that's really important. So you've already got your goals before you go in, and then you're being specific to what you want to do. So let's say I wanted to go and do a low body session. I wanted to focus it around a squat maybe. I would want to chuck some form of squats in there. Even if it's without any weight, which you would do straight away, you're doing the movement that you're then going to train.
Yeah.
Which is really important, because if I've not warmed up to doing that movement and I shove 100 kilos on my back, there's no chance.
Nope.
I'm not warmed up, not prepared for it. So that's where the specificity comes in. You then go on to potentiating. So potentiating, for it's basically a complex word for working the muscle a little bit harder than what it needs to, or you're working up to a level that it's going to be working at during your session. It's as simple as that. So potentiating might be doing like some dynamic work, so some plyometrics,
yeah.
So jump exercises. I think Mike wanted to
have a little chat about that. Something that actually made one of the biggest differences in my own training was including dynamic plyometric based work at the end of a warm up. So like if I was going to go into a bench day, it would be throwing a med ball against a wall, you know, chucking, exploding into it. If I was doing a lower body day, so deadlifts or squats, I might be doing a box jump, a broad jump, you know, some sort of explosive work. And I was using it mainly to like excite my nervous system to kind of wake myself up a little bit more. But I never really, if I'm honest, knew the full reasoning why, other than I just knew it made me actually feel a bit more awake after. So Jack knows.
And a bit more.
And not more, why.
So if you wanted to go a bit more into that, if you think when you stretch a muscle, so this is going back to more kind of your flexibility work. So if you stretch a muscle, obviously there'll be a point where you stretch it and then it won't stretch any further. So that's called your myotatic reflex. So it's basically when you get to an end range and then it'll go, right, no, I'm not stretching any further. I'm going to do damage here. And then it contracts. So when we're doing our dynamic work, so if you're doing plyometrics, that falls under ballistic stretching. So where it's really quick, it's nice and quick, you're bouncing into it, it's reactive. That's working your myotatic reflex. So even though it's called a ballistic stretch, it's not really a stretch. You're not going to gain any extra length out of it, but you're working the joint through its full range of motion. You're working the muscle through its full range of motion. So when you then go into your exercise, it's fully prepared and it's woken up the nervous system, like we said. So you've got your myotatic reflex, and you could break them down even further. You've got your muscle spindles and your Golgi tendon organs. They measure the length and the tension in the muscles and tendons. And that is what essentially the myotatic reflex is. Not to go a little bit too complex on it, really.
So. What are your thoughts on like warm-ups that last longer than the actual workout itself?
Right. So we've all seen the person who goes in, they'll roll around on the gym floor mats for about half an hour. They'll do some foam rolling. They'll probably
do some band work.
Prep walks. Every single sort of movement. It's like a workout in a workout, really, but really low level.
Yeah.
So it all depends on what you're trying to achieve. So if I wanted to go and do a mobility session, that might be effective. So if I do 30 minutes of some band work, some foam rolling, some stretching, great, that's absolutely fantastic on its own.
Active recovery work.
Yeah, so like we said, like active recovery is essentially working to a lower level than what you would normally, but you're promoting blood flow.
The goal, yeah.
You're getting the muscles working again. So you're getting some nervous input there. It's all really effective. So you're not just sat at home chilling out. You're actually doing something to aid in recovery. So when we said DOMS at the start, if you've got DOMS, the best thing actually to do is to work, get the muscles working, go for a walk, do something really light. Yeah, so you're increasing blood flow, you're getting nutrients to the muscles again, and all that helps to recover.
Yeah.
But yeah, going back to the original question about them lasting 30 minutes, you don't need to do it. 10 minutes.
Yeah.
10 to 15 minutes max is what you should be looking at for a warm-up. And if you're specific enough, then you can even do it shorter than that if you really wanted to.
I think Jordan Shallows, you've seen him on Instagram, the pre-script.
Yeah.
He talks about, so say like he'll do, say he's got a lower body day, he'll do some sort of test, so it might be like the hip airplane.
Yeah.
Which obviously we can't really demonstrate. we're not on video. So he'll say do that if he feels, you know, tension in his hips or whatever. He might say do TFL release. He'll then go into his first warm-up set, say he's squatting that day. He'll then do his first warm-up set of squats. My back feels a bit tight. He'll then go down and do something for his back. He'll go back to the squat, bit more weight on there. Okay, feels a bit better, still feels a bit tight. He'll then go back, he'll do blah, blah, blah. And he keeps kind of working like that. So he works his warm up into his routine a bit more, basically.
Yeah, and that builds into the specificity.
Yeah.
That's that word. That we were talking about before. So you're actually doing movements that you're going to be doing in your session.
Yeah.
So yeah, and essentially what he's trying to do as well is he's figuring out what areas feel good and what areas don't feel good. So if you go in, you feel particularly stiff in a certain area. So generally we're talking hips, back for most people.
Hips, backs, maybe shoulders.
Shoulders, and that's generally when you've been sat down for a while. So like I am now, just starting to creep forward.
I'm leaning on one side.
So yeah, you've got... when you're talking about that situation, you're looking at which muscles have been shortened and which muscles have been in a longer position. Generally, when you sat down, you've got your pecs, so your chest at the front, they become tight. They then pull your shoulders forward and you become rounded. So we've heard of a rounded posture before. The muscles on the back are then put on a bit of stress because they're lengthened and they're trying to hold you in position, hold your posture. You then have, it's called reciprocal inhibition, where basically when one muscle contracts, so that would be the pecs in this situation where they become short, the muscles on the opposite side relax. And that's when they start to become weak. So you see a lot of people, they end up, especially, it generally happens in like the older population when they spend more time sat down. So they become more and more rounded because the pecs are short and tight at the front, the muscles at the back are long and weak. So to get them out of that position, you've got to think, right, I've got to stretch out the front and then I've got to activate the back and get them working in because they're weak. So I want to get them working. So that's why we generally in the gym start doing more pull work than push work.
Yeah, we talked a little bit on this last week, mm-hmm. didn't we, Daz? You know, for whatever pushing you do, a good rule of thumb is to do double the amount of pulling. I was going to say, you know, people say that I'm tight, but some cases they're weak.
Yeah.
They're not tight, they are just weak in a certain area. So tension actually is a beneficial thing.
Strange,
to have,
isn't
depending
it?
On what it is.
Because we all think flexibility and mobility is actually stretching, relaxing.
You can be over flexible, can't you?
Yeah.
You can get people that are flexible as well, but they're not mobile.
Yeah. So it's a weird concept. It's like my muscles can stretch out really long, but my joints don't really function very well.
My joints won't allow me to move in a certain way.
Yeah. So that again goes back to the difference between mobility and flexibility. So mobility is more than just what your muscles do. So mobility, you've got your joints. They're made up of your joint capsule. They're made up of ligaments. They're obviously made up of the tendons and muscles as well that connect onto them. If, say, in frozen shoulder, it's a really common one, the joint capsule becomes really tight around the head of your humerus, so your top of your arm, and that restricts the movement, not the muscles and tendons that attach onto it. So with all the will in the world, you can try and stretch someone with a frozen shoulder, but you're not going to get very far. So you can do a bit of release work on the muscles, but they're not going to get what they want out of it. So you've got to try and move the joint differently to get a bit of a response out of it.
What me and Jack were talking about the other day was when someone has like sports massage, you know, both me and Jack are both trained with sports massages. We'll do a sports massage, you know, you do a little bit of release work, they'll get a bit more range of motion in there, which is great. And we tell them, you know, after, you know, next couple of days, keep working through that range of motion that you've now got. But typically, people don't.
A common thing you actually hear, you get told to go away and relax. Which, if you're going for, let's say, you're going for a spa day and you have a Swedish massage, the goal of that is to relax for most people. So it's not so important. Whereas...
Yeah, that's just a chill hour, isn't it?
Yeah. When you're talking sports massage is there to target specific areas. So if we're tight in the pecs, we want to get a bit more movement into them. You then want to work the muscle. You want to work it. So we've done all this work to get more movement into it.
Yeah.
And then we just go and sit back home and get it in a shortened position
again. Straight back into that position again. Over time, the brain learns, doesn't it, to go, oh, actually, no, I felt better with my shoulders back.
Yeah.
It does start to learn that.
And then the opposite of that is where you spend so long in that position that you become chronically tight. So you've become, you're always tight in that position. And that's when your posture comes into play. So people who spend a lot of time sat down, hunched over, it's then quite hard actually to get them back into an upright posture. It takes a little bit of time because you've got to then put a bit of movement back into it. So your sports massage, just general stretching day to day, but then you've got to work the muscle.
It has to become subconscious though, doesn't it, as well?
Yeah.
No one really consciously goes, oh no, my shoulders.
I need to sit up.
It almost has to become subconscious, doesn't it? That your body will learn to go, no, actually, this feels better.
Yeah.
This feels better, sat more upright. You know, I didn't like it last time when I was crunched down for a while.
Yeah. I mean, for me, no matter how conscious I am of when I'm sat down and go, right, sit up straight, I always end up reverting back to being hunched over. So my advice for that would be try and stand up as much as you can.
Yeah,
I know it's hard sometimes because if you're at work, aren't you? You can't really help it. But just being able to stand up for an hour, every hour.
One of the girls at the gym the other night was saying,
"Got a name dropper again, Joe." We said we'd name drop her
right,
every podcast.
Can't
fault her now.
She has a timer on her watch that so if she's working, it reminds her to stand up.
Yeah, it's
so,
a great idea.
Yeah. Just little nudge to
that's ideal because then she doesn't even have to think about that then.
Yeah.
It's just the timer goes off, right, up I go.
Yeah.
Like you could easily just get up, go and have a wander around and then come back. It takes 30 seconds, a minute.
Yeah.
But that in itself just helps to promote a bit more posture. And then when you do sit back down, probably you'll sit back up straight again.
Just kind of reset, don't you?
Yeah.
So what I was going to say as well was, going back to talking about people that spend 30, 40 minutes doing the mobility warm-ups, one thing again that I've used and use with my clients is micro-dosing the mobility. Yep. It's the same thing, like every hour getting up for a walk, say my back feels tight or whatever, instead of just doing it before a session, it's just throughout the day, just chucking in a minute stretch or a little bit of movement to just alleviate some of that pain.
Yeah, so you've got, when you're sat at a chair, it's not to say that if you're sat at the desk, could you not just kind of kneel, like do like a lunge kneeling position for 30 seconds, do that on each side, minute, job done,
well, this,
and you're still sat there.
Watching the TV or...
This falls into what I do for a living, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'm sat here between... I'm sat here Monday to Friday between 2 and 7 in the afternoon, right? Yeah. And I've had to do it. Just, I don't even make a cup of tea. I just go and walk to the kitchen, and then I just walk back again.
Yeah.
Or I might just stretch. You know, you're like when you've laid down for a bit, you just might stretch. I'm doing it on here. You can't even see me doing it. But I'm holding my arms out.
I was swinging my arms around.
I'm pushing my chest forward so my shoulder blades meet in the middle. You know, is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And obviously you're doing that regularly throughout the day.
Yeah.
And that's microdosing essentially. It's nothing difficult. It's, like you say, it's 30 seconds a minute.
Yeah.
Doesn't take very long, and it actually doesn't really impact what you're doing, does it?
No.
You can still talk into the microphone while you're stretching.
Why would I... I'm sitting here now. I've sat here since 2:05 of the day of this recording. We are now half an hour into the recording, so that's 30 minutes. And I get this every day. Lower back, it's just an ache, just a dull ache. Lower back, just above my butt cheeks. Is there something in there, doctor?
So essentially what will be happening there is your lower back will be, it won't be in an arched position, it'll have been stretched out. So all the muscles in your lower back, namely your QL, it's abbreviated to, so quadratus lumborum, that gets really sore in a lot of people. And it restricts a lot of like the rotation in your back as well.
It's pretty hard to hit as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. But I mean, you can
do it.
It's more a matter of working it for me. You've also got all the muscles that run up your spine as well. They're being put on a little bit of a stretch. So when you lean forward, when you overarch, you're essentially putting a bit of strain on your nervous system. So all the muscles in your back are becoming tight. That then causes a bit of aggravation, I'd say, in your lower back, so it becomes a little bit tight, a little bit sore. And obviously when you're sat in that position for a long time, it goes back to the long and weak situation. So you get it a lot in the shoulders and in the upper back. So when people have, you call it pokey chin, so when people point the chin forward, happens a lot when people are sat on the phones, That's where you essentially bring your chin forward, all the muscles in your neck, so the main ones are your traps, so your upper trapezius muscles, they become really tight, really long, and then all the muscles at the front, so big one for you is your sternocleidomastoid.
I used to hate having to say it. why is that not abbreviated?
It is actually very sorry.
Is it?
Yeah, stern. So it'd be SCM.
Right, so it's
sternocleidomastoid.
Is that the one down there?
Yeah. So if you kind of feel, if you feel kind of down the side of your neck towards the front, so just to the side of your Adam's apple.
Yeah.
That muscle there, that then becomes short and weak.
All right. Yeah.
So if you end up putting your head backwards like that, then you'll feel all these muscles here at the front starts to become really tight.
Yeah, I can feel that there, yeah.
And it actually becomes really hard to close your mouth when you're in that position as well. Because those muscles act upon the jaw as well.
We're all sitting here doing it.
I wish I'd got a video of that.
Wow.
So yeah, you got your same idea at the lower back really, is those muscles have then become long and weak. That then ties into the front, so your abdominal muscles, so they then become tight and weak. So a lot of people, it's like they become too relaxed at the front and then they don't function very well.
Yeah.
Then when you go in the gym, a lot of people end up over arching their back because they're compensating for the weakness at the front.
We see, don't you, when people say that their backs are sore, they typically will overarch and do that.
Yeah, I've done that loads of times. Yeah. Whereas, it feels like I'm relieving something and it feels better momentarily. That's better. I've moved a bit.
Whereas realistically, you probably would be better coming the other way and contracting your abs a bit more.
Yeah, so.
Like, say if you want to relax, the other has to.
A technique I actually got shown was if you have particularly tight lower back muscles, just get on the floor and do 20 crunches.
Yeah.
Because that ties into a bit of the stretching, so that's that reciprocal inhibition. So I'm working the muscles on the front, so Sherrington's law it is, where the opposite muscle then has to relax as a consequence. So if those muscles have become overactive, so you've been sat there, they're put on strain because you're slightly further forward, you then work the opposite muscles, they then relax. So you get a temporary relief. And then ideally, you go and kind of work them a bit more. Yeah. But most people then just sit back in their chair, don't they?
Yeah.
But it's that temporary relief that you can get just from doing 20 crunches. Not even 20, 10 crunches.
Well, you talk amongst yourselves. I need to stand up anyway. Yeah.
You need to do some crunches.
Yeah. Just sound like an old guy. Right. What else have you got, Mike?
So we were talking the other day, again, me and Jack, about kind of like general warm-up guidelines for your average person.
Yeah,
I think so. Not necessarily too specific with the thing, but just a general warm-up guideline. And one thing that I'd seen was mobilize the muscles that you can see in the mirror, and activate the muscles that you cannot see in the mirror.
Right.
So the muscles you can see in the mirror, so your pecs, your shoulders, you know, your quads, your hips. Mobilize those, work them through a range of motion, and then activate the ones that you can't: hamstrings, glutes, erector spinae, trapezius, shoulder blades, all around the scapula, and activate those. So I think that kind of, I use it sometimes if we just have like a general session at the gym, is, you know, we ask the question, how's everyone feeling, blah blah blah, you know, if people are feeling tight in the back, we've got specific warm-ups for lower backs and etc. If everyone typically feels good, I can just work them through that. What do you think, Jack?
Yeah, that would be a good rule of thumb to follow if you were doing, say, a conditioning session.
Yeah.
Where you're actually trying to hit everything. So everyone's heard of like a HIIT workout before. Like HIIT can really encompass every single muscle in your body. So you want to try and work them all to a certain level. So if you followed that rule of thumb where you mobilize the front, activate the back, you're following that rule of thumb again. So the muscles on the back that become long and weak, you're getting them working. So you're bringing your posture up, and then the muscles on the front that become tight, you're then relaxing them off. So you're allowing yourself to get into a better posture for then what you're going to do in the session. But doing that way, where you just follow a general rule, you can fly through it because you can do lots of exercises that hit multiple different muscles in one go. So that kind of goes back to the strength training element where you do your compound lifts. So you do more exercises that hit more muscle groups. You get more bang for your buck.
Yeah.
So rather than isolating things all the time.
Just going back to what Mike said about, and yourself, Jack, about moving stuff that you're about to work and all that kind of stuff. I've got to be honest with you now, and you probably make your clients do this in the gym anyway, right? In all the years I've been to the gym on and off, I've never seen anybody do that movement that they're going to do with the shoulders or whatever. I've never seen anybody prepare to start lifting weights. In the warm-up that I've been told about, which is probably the wrong way to do it, is just go light on that and then you'll warm that up.
It's not necessarily wrong as such, though. Like, it does fall in line with you are warming up for the exercise you're about to do.
Yeah. However, we'd call them warm-up sets, wouldn't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, you know, that falls in line with more warm-up sets. It's probably a more optimal route to take, which would be like to follow Jack's, like the ramp guidelines.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, raise your pulse a little bit, activate.
Yeah, so essentially what you're doing is you're kind of skipping the pulse raise a bit of it, and then you're going straight into the mobilization part. So you're activating as well to a low level.
Is that a bad thing then?
So it's...
I got to be careful.
It's just when... Obviously, if you go in and you know you can lift X amount of kilos, so let's say you benched 100 kilos and you went in and just started off benching the bar, just 20 kilos. That's not going to overstress the muscle because it's capable of a lot more than that. But let's say you walked in and your max was 30 kilos. You then bench the bar, you're doing, 66% of your one rep max? You're getting up to a much higher level there very quickly. So you're not giving the muscle chance to fire up as well.
Yeah.
So that goes back to like your nervous system, so potentiating. So you want to give it a chance to build up to what weight you're going to be doing gradually. And it's really important because your nervous system isn't always firing at 100%. Well, in fact, it very rarely fires at 100%. And especially during the day, it's doing as little work as possible because your body tries to be as efficient as possible during the day. It doesn't want to use energy. It wants to spare energy all the time. So when you're trying to work a bit harder, just got to build up a bit more.
There's an analogy I used to use at the gym, which, you know, correct me if I'm wrong with this one, Jack, and Kate, don't kill me for saying steak. Don't kill me for this one. But say, you know, you take a piece of steak out of the freezer, think about how much more easy you could snap that steak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas when you heat it up, it becomes a lot more pliable.
Yeah, and it bends a bit more and you can
a bit more. I kind of think of your muscles in that respect.
Yeah.
You know, if they're cold, you know, there's a lot higher chance for things to start going wrong. I think that the next thing I wanted to talk about really was with Kate was it kind of falls in line with the mobility and flexibility kind of thing of not just, you know, the warm-up routines, but specific sessions that can help improve things. Like, so you've got yoga, Pilates, hot yoga. I don't really know the difference between yoga and Pilates.
So and I was going to ask Kate. Well, I mean, I have done quite a bit of both, and I do Pilates regularly because I did struggle with my back, so that led me to Pilates, which is more about focusing on the core, the inner muscles, so working on the inside out. So we were talking before about not utilizing the front muscles, but always utilizing your back, for example, in the gym. And that is exactly what I was doing. I was not activating my core and my abs, doing a lot of back work. So it was just, for me, it's about, you know, retraining those muscles, getting them activating and firing. And I'm a lot more conscious just with things like bending down and picking things up, activating muscles instead of just relying on people. Everybody does it in day-to-day stuff, relies on, you know, they bend down and they don't really focus on
muscle
form.
Stuff up, really.
Yeah. So it's just becoming aware of your body and feeling your body and knowing how things are moving and working and an understanding a little bit more of the mechanics behind those movements. Yeah. And I think Pilates and yoga give you that. Yoga's slightly different because it's it really improves flexibility. And I think a lot of people think yoga's really easy. It's not. It's really hard.
Yeah, ruined by it.
There are lots of different types of yoga, so it's really about finding the one that you engage with and the teacher you engage with. But it's absolutely brilliant for the body and the joints, and also emotional and spiritual health. That's I discovered yoga a couple of years ago and love it. Absolutely love it. Increases so flexibility, strength and posture, balance. So as we get older, you know, our balance goes, we don't come as, you know, we start losing our stability. Mm. So really good for increasing balance, increases energy, reduces stress, and like, you know, how we all live today. So yeah, stress, anxiety, great for reducing that, and therefore stress related illnesses, which we talked about before. So regular practice can help ease muscle tightness as well, so lengthening again.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that shortening is what's causing your back pain and, you know, yeah, aches and pains through the body during the day. So can you get into some yoga then, Darren?
I might come and do a little bit. Yeah. Do my downward dog, whatever you call it.
Downward dog, honestly, it is really good. And great for breathing and getting oxygen flowing through the body. So
that was one thing I wanted to ask Jack about as well.
Oh, another one. Mental note. And becoming more mindful. So the spiritual side of yoga, you know, a lot of people poo-poo it, but actually, they do, though. But it's great. You've got to try it. It's lovely.
I have to admit, there's bits of it when you started talking about your third eye and the middle of your forehead and stuff. There's a fine line.
So many have been made.
Don't go there.
Don't
go there.
Don't ask
for
third eye.
No,
no, no. I'm not. Stop. Can I? We're not about to go into the flat Earth fraternity here, are we? Third eye and supernatural.
It's really beneficial for the mind, and we've done a podcast on mental health and mental health issues and mindfulness, and it's really good for building on that. So I can only highly recommend it, having done it myself.
Look at Giggsy.
And look at Ryan Giggs, exactly. He was a big advocate for yoga.
Retired at 41.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, there was actually a time when, I remember when they talked about it, when he actually took yoga up. I think it was around like when he was 27, 28. So it was actually quite late into his career, really.
Yeah.
But he started suffering with a lot of hamstring injuries. So the medical team then started to introduce Pilates and yoga into his workouts. And just linking back to what Kate said before, having that ability to relax is so important. So, for example, like when I was at St. Helens during my university degree, they started to prioritise a lot about getting into it's called your parasympathetic state once you finish working out. So, especially in rugby, they do a lot of heavy lifting. So they'll go into a heavy lifting session, they work really hard, and they're actually using what's called your sympathetic nervous system. So some people refer to it as fight or flight. So where your body's kind of like, right, I've just got to try and get this done. Yeah. So if you're lifting a heavy weight, say, your body prioritizes getting blood flow to your limbs, like your peripheral joints, rather than prioritizing digestion. So a little bit of it happens, but it prioritizes other things. So typically when people go and have a big meal before they work out, then they start getting a stitch during the workout. It's because actually, like, there's not as, the body's trying to get blood flow to the stomach to digest this food, but then it's also trying to get blood flow to the rest of the body to move these weights around. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to get back into that parasympathetic state after you've finished working out, and it's really important. And that's why yoga is so good. And Pilates as well, but Pilates focuses a lot more on your core strength and trying to tie things together a bit more. Whereas I found from my experience, yoga is relax. and get into positions and relax in
and
the positions.
I gotta be,
yeah, breathing.
Forgive me for being so flippant what I'm about to say, but I mean it in a respectful way. But if I could come across like that, but the ladies that I've ever met that do yoga and Pilates, they're all very toned and very fit, and they all look hot. I'm just saying.
Do you reckon? You know? Do you reckon there's a link there between the two?
I think so. Yeah. But yeah, right.
But
listen.
So where we go from there?
We have. Would you like to know the length of this one, Mike?
5 minutes.
More.
More. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I'll leave that in, by the way, because it's not a swear word. But it's.
You don't have to bleep that one.
We're just about approaching 54 minutes.
Oh, Christ. Well,
I'm really sorry.
It's all right, mate. One thing we say about Jack before he did his degree, he was one of the most intelligent, knowledgeable trainers I'd ever worked with.
Yeah.
Now he's done his degree.
I know.
It's an absolute nightmare.
He's got more knowledge. He's got out there. But I suppose, I guess we can have like a little quick announcement just at the end.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Jack is actually going to be coming to work with us at Silk Fitness Therapy, and he will be our sports therapist.
Yep.
Fantastic. Well
so
done.
On-site sports therapist.
Welcome to their team.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
So, great.
It's amazing. Everyone go on to the Facebook page, onto Instagram, Twitter. What else do they have?
There's LinkedIn.
LinkedIn, the website. Follow Silk Fitness Therapy. So get on top of that. Because me and Mike and Kay are actually planning a lot of really good content.
You can share this podcast as well, Jack.
Of course. Silk Fitness Therapy podcast available on iTunes,
Spotify, Silk FM website.
Yeah.
So get on top of that as well.
Yeah, you'll see a lot more in-depth content appearing on the social media channels soon.
Got some good guests lined up.
Come and book in with Jack as well.
Yeah, get booked in.
Get booked in.
Fabulous. Thank you very much, everybody, for episode number 7. Next week's episode is the final.
The final one.
The final. What are we talking about?
I think we're going to do a Q&A.
So okay.
I think we're going to put some stuff out there for people to ask us some questions, and we'll just answer them.
Okay. Am I banned from asking questions?
No,
you know what I'm like.
As long as it's not
what we've already answered.
Yes, okay, yeah.
I'm not talking about faster cardio.
Okay, so we do a question and answer. If anybody wants to get in contact with us, you can either email the radio station, first of all, email us at studio@silk1069.com, or, Mike?
Through our Instagram page, at SFT Macclesfield, Facebook, Silk Fitness Therapy. They can either email myself, Kate, or Jack at our names, and at silkfitnesstherapy.com.
Ooh, well done.
Ooh. Fantastic. Thank you, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.